The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, it's the last Friday for Micheál Martin in his current role as Taoiseach before the changeover happens tomorrow afternoon. We're going to talk about what that changeover might mean with our panel. And our Friday forum is made up of Philip Ryan, political editor with the Irish Independent, the Sinn Féin Mayo TD, and the party's spokesperson for higher and further education, research, innovation and science, Rose Conway Walsh. And we'll be joined by Neil Richmond, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown and spokesperson on European affairs. We should talk first of all about, I suppose, the later breaking news this week, and that was the death of Private Sean Rooney in Lebanon, which came, it appears, from nowhere, Philip, and has saddened the whole country, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it's a horrific incident, and like you say, it's not something that anyone would have expected. We have our troops over in places like Lebanon and elsewhere. They're there on peacekeeping duties. They're not there for conflict. They're there to ensure there is no conflict. The exact details of what happened, we still have to transpire. So we don't really know how they ended up in this circumstance and how they ended up in such a fracas with locals. And look, the investigation will just look into that. But it's going to be a very hard Christmas for the soldiers' family.
Indeed, the family of Private Sean Rooney, and indeed the family of Private Sean Carney from Cork, Shane Carney from Cork, who was very seriously injured and had to undergo presumably life-saving surgery. Neil, your take on this, I mean, does it throw into any question the role of Ireland in fulfilling United Nations missions?
I don't think so, Pat. I think this is a massive tragedy for the entire nation, but particularly for the families affected and the Defence Forces family more widely. It's over two decades since the last member of the Defence Forces was killed in a peacekeeping mission again in the Lebanon. We have a very proud track record, but the situation, unfortunately, in this part of the world is it's getting increasingly tense over the last number of months. This is the opinion of all the people who are kind of clued into the Middle East at this situation. There will be a need for a very thorough investigation led by the United Nations, but it's just the worst possible tragedy, particularly so close to Christmas.
The reporting suggests that this was a local issue at the point of the attack, a local issue with the UN, unlikely to have been Irish UN personnel who had that difficulty, but nonetheless, that's what the reporting is, and it was something that got out of hand. Rose Conway Walsh, the death of a soldier in this situation is very, very sad, but we have to rejoice, I suppose, in the fact that we haven't had a fatality for two decades, given all the overseas and very dangerous overseas service that our personnel have been involved with.
Yeah, Pat, I think it's very hard for anyone to get past the grief of the family at this moment in time. There will be a number of investigations. We haven't had deaths in that way for a couple of decades, but it's just the absolute grief of the family of losing their 23-year-old son. And it's just, I think that's where people are at the moment. We'll have to wait to see what the outcome of the investigations are, but also to send our very best wishes to the family of Shane Kearney. I think, you know, I suppose as a mother of two sons myself, my eldest son is 21. It's just unimaginable the grief that that family must be going through right now.
Well, the grief of the family of father of Private Sean Rooney, and the worry, I suppose, of the family of Private Shane Carney in Cork. We are thinking of them, and there's no doubt that's a sentiment echoed right throughout the country. Interesting, Philip, that Hezbollah actually made a statement yesterday about all of this, and they asked not to be included in the narrative. They said it wasn't them, that it was a local incident involving some spat between locals, and obviously guns are currency in Lebanon, access to handguns, access to automatic weapons fairly easily there, so things can get out of hand, and dangerously out of hand, as we saw.
Yeah, look, it is an area of the world that's always been dangerous for the troops there. And I think, as you alluded earlier, it is quite remarkable that there hasn't been more incidents involving Irish troops and the locals. Hezbollah controls the area to some extent, but in a lot of these cases with these type of organisations, they can be quite disparate. There can be different fractions, there can be different elements who might be a little bit more militant than others and have views that are different, but... in this case, if Hezbollah don't want anything to do it, maybe their best place to help find those who were involved.
All right, well, we will leave that issue alone for the moment. Now, one of the set pieces during the week was the vote of no confidence, which became a confidence vote in the housing minister, Dara O'Brien. Philip, let's take the political commentator's assessment of what went on, because it did seem... rather pointless.
These motions of confidence, when it is a majority, are pointless in the sense that the end result is always one thing. The minister's colleagues come out and they defend him and they put down a motion of confidence to counteract a no confidence motion, and everybody stands up in the dole for a couple of hours and beats the drum of whatever their certain political position is, and off we go into the sunset and nothing changes. For the opposition, it's to shine a light on the government, to show that their policies aren't working, to show that the commitments made in various housing plans, which we've seen over the last decade, are still haven't really borne any results which people can see on the ground or can see in the rents they have to pay or the price of houses, etc. So, look, it's a bit of political theatre. It's both sides are use it to their advantage. It can, when there's a motion of confidence in, or of no confidence rather, in a minister, it can, you know, rally the troops behind them and embolden them. One thing, you'd be very surprised now this weekend if after voting confidence in Housing Minister Dara O'Brien that the Taoiseach would turn around and sack him. So I think he can be happy that the opposition did that this week.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean, in theory, that they couldn't have confidence in him in another ministry. But anyway, all the auspices are that he is not going to be moved. Rose Conway-Walsh, you spoke during the debate. I mean, the point of it being obviously to give people platforms, but the result inevitable.
I think it's to hold the government to account, and I think we have to use every possible opportunity to do that, because what we see, Pat, is the longer that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in power, the worse the housing crisis gets. Housing was a test of this government, and 3 years on from the general election, we see that they have failed it spectacularly. And some of the reasons for that were outlined in the debate the last day. I think now where we have the situation where the housing crisis is undermining the health service and the education system and the whole economy. And also, I think what's really, really worrying is the number of young people who are planning or who already have immigrated. So we're pushing another generation of young Irish people to immigrate, and we can't afford the mess to continue any longer. So I think that's the motion the last day was just one mechanism to hold the government to account. But there's so many things that were highlighted even during the course of that debate that would tell you it's not a change of Taoiseach we need. It's a general election, and it's a whole new direction.
And Neil Richmond, obviously you have great confidence in Dara O'Brien supporting him in this way. But, the failure of sorting out the housing problem. I remember the beginning of this government and I was suggesting if they sorted out housing, just give themselves two or three big topics and forget about the rest, they would be a successful government. Well, they're struggling with the big one of housing.
Yeah, I suppose you also throw in the context that you probably made that comment prior to a global pandemic and a war in Ukraine. But that aside, housing is absolutely...
That's for sure. I'm not prescient.
Housing, of course, is the number one issue for the government. And that's why it's important that debates like this, and of course it's worth saying that the motion was won by the government by over 23, a much larger margin than many expected. But debates like this have to be based in actuality, in fact. And that's why we see between completions and commencements over 55,000 homes coming into the system this this calendar year. And also, and this is an article that we keep hearing from Rose and her colleagues in relation to this so-called emigration. This is based on anecdotal evidence and based on people coming to their clinics, I'm sure, but it isn't based in fact. The CSO figures are quite clear that we still have net inward migration, that we actually have lower emigration now than we did a decade ago. And I think it's really responsible in all of us to hold each other to account, government to be held to account by the opposition and vice versa.
Okay, but you have to dissect those figures from the CSO, and I don't have them in front of me, but I mean, who's coming in? Are they people who are going to high-paying tech jobs who can afford to rent down in the Dublin docks, for example, at high prices? Meanwhile, our teachers and our nurses who can't afford those kind of rents are getting out. You see, you know, net...
Well, that's when we look at the CSO figures.
The figure alone may lie.
Well, that's why you don't just look at the figure alone. I'm glad you asked that, because obviously you take aside people who are coming here as refugees and for international protection. That's a completely separate issue. That's of the here and now. But if you look at the people who are coming in the sectors, it's not just the big well-paying jobs in tech. It's the fact that Ireland is an extremely desirable country for people to move in. It's one of the fastest growing economies in the EU. We are the only EU country that maintained exports.
And people, when you come in, where to live?
And people are coming in and they are finding accommodation. It is a massive challenge. I'm not pretending like it's not. It is, I believe, absolutely the number one priority of the government to make housing for all work, to deliver that accommodation for everyone, because they're not just coming into the big tech jobs. They're coming in to the services industry. They're coming in every area. Yep. And this is laid quite clearly in the statistics by the CSO, that we still have more people coming in than leaving.
He's just saying one set of statistics, but I would say to you, Neil, that there is evidence, and there's evidence, two pieces of evidence even in the last week from Eurostat, in terms of people's quality of living here, particularly people, younger people, and how they're finding it increasingly expensive to live.
But Rose, can
on.
You cite where you say, you constantly are saying that people are emigrating.
Yes.
Give me those statistics, because you're standard living.
Yeah, I can tell you, well, I can certainly tell you from my clinics, I can certainly tell you from at home, but I can give you the Eurostat figures. If you look at two pieces of information that came out last week from Eurostat in terms of people's standard of living and young people in particular, I will certainly show you. I haven't them right in front of me now.
Because I know those figures, Rose, and they don't talk about standard living. They talk about perceived happiness and perceived
quality
emotion.
Quality of life.
Perception. But when they talk about actualities in terms of health span, in terms of lifespan, in terms of the amount people are earning this in Ireland compared to the EU, it scores extremely high. And that's why people aren't actually emigrating, despite you consistently saying it without statistical evidence.
I really think that history won't be kind to you in that sense, because I think as you will see the months go on, maybe you're not aware of what's happening on the ground.
But Rose, that's just a throwaway
happening.
Political
babble.
No, I'm using statistics. I have clinics. I am engaging with people on a daily basis. But this is a consistent narrative. You're trying to paint it out that it's Ireland of the 80s and 50s at the moment, when it's not.
I think listeners will make up their own mind as to, and we'll see even in terms of, and I said this in the Dáil the other day, in terms of the football teams that are able to field teams across this country where young people have had to immigrate. And what I find, Pat, is that there's an awful lot seem to be going for Australia this time, other than other places.
Yeah, but I mean, many young people, Rose, just go because they want to go. I went, lived for a year in the United States, came back. And there are many people who decide they want a bit of adventure, that, you know, the lure of permanent partnership, eventually marriage or whatever, is such that they want to defer it. They want to, you know, have a few years being fancy free. Sometimes they end up forming permanent partnerships in other countries and never come back. That's a given. That's part of the way life is. But sometimes you have to separate those who are going for adventure, or, as we've spoken many times on the program about teachers going to the Middle East to make big pots of money so they can buy a mortgage-free house when they come back. All sorts of reasons why people go.
And Pat, there certainly is. But when there's forced immigration or situation, like I spent a lot of time myself outside the country, but when there's forced immigration, I think what we really need to be careful of is that we don't make the reality normal. We are one of the richest countries in the world. Forcing people to immigrate because they cannot afford something as basic as a house, or they can't afford the rent. And what more and more people are telling me is that they cannot afford the rent. So they're existing rather than living because the rent is so high. Now, you have to look in terms of the amount people pay from their salaries in rent alone will show you that there isn't an income left there to live a quality of life in. So I think when you dig deep in the figures, or not even, you don't even have to dig that deep, but to see that people have nothing left from their wages at the end of the week when they pay rent. Yeah. And now we see interest rates increasing as well.
Okay, Philip, I want to go back to Philip because you know, you'll have the two political sides arguing the toss. And maybe things are quiet in Mayo this coming up to Christmas. Things in Dublin City, with which I'd be familiar, it's party central.
Yeah, well, it's that time of year, isn't it? And people are out and about. And as someone who I suppose was, could be counted as a young person back in 2008 and 2007, 2009, when there was a proper immigration problem. And I had lots of friends who went off to the likes of Canada, the US, New Zealand, Australia, and worked out for a lot of them, I have to say. And some of them only come back to visit now, and they're happy in those places. I have one friend in particular who moved to Canada and actually owns about four houses at this stage. So like, it is a situation that some of these countries are. There is more opportunities for people. I wouldn't be as in touch as people who are in their early 20s these days because I'm a bit older. So I don't know what the impact really is, but it doesn't feel, like you say, the city in itself does seem busy. But on the other side of it, I would say that there's a lot of stuff closing. When you see restaurants closing, coffee shops closing, pubs closing and things like that, just anecdotally you see around the place that there does seem to be some sort of issues. And the whole nightlife scene in Dublin has changed in itself as well, especially around this working from home thing that that the government has been promoting, that even the weekends are different now. Friday night isn't the night it used to be. It's more about Thursday nights and elements like that. So there has been a change in dynamic. And I think that next year and the year after that will be the most telling years for the economy, when Fianna Fáil and the Greens, of course, will have to put very much their focus on the bread and butter issues that people are facing. There'll be no more pandemics.
It'll be a different looking government in some respects, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first of all, the Friday qualifier, I have to mention this, is Louise Clark from Carlingford in County Louth. And Louise will take her chances with the four other winners, and we'll announce at the end who gets the holiday to Lapland in December of 2023. Isn't it great to be looking forward to December 2023 as we still head up to Christmas 2022? Anyway, the shape of things to come. Neil, we'll go to you first. Are you expecting preferment?
I think expectation in politics is a bad trait. I'm very much looking forward to electing my friend Leo Varadkar as Taoiseach tomorrow. I think it's been a very good government for the past 2.5 years. Micheál Martin's done an excellent job, and I very much hope to continue to serve the people of Dublin Rathdown as best as others see fit.
So I presume you are committing, though, to running in the next election in a couple of years' time, because otherwise you're not eligible for preferment, according to the current Taoiseach about to be Taoiseach.
Indeed. Well, I committed to run for re-election in Dublin Rathdown the minute they elected me the first time. So I'm very, very aware how fortunate I am to be a TD. And both myself and Rose, we've argued the toss there and will argue many times. But I think we both appreciate it is a massive honour to be a TD. And we have a huge responsibility to our constituents. And being able to put yourself forward for re-election is certainly another big honour.
Okay. So, Rose, and the hard question for you, because you are in opposition, it is the duty of the opposition to oppose and to hold the government to account. Is there anybody there that you think did a good job?
Within the government?
Yeah.
You might say that I would say that anyway, but no, I think if you look at the issues like housing and health in particular, they certainly haven't done a good job. But you just have to look at the outcomes of the actions that they've had, and that's why I'd say that we need a change of government, not just a change of
Heard you praise Simon Coveney numerous times in relation to the protocol and Brexit.
I'm not... Absolutely. Well,
so I'd say he's done a particularly good job.
That was the question. The question I asked was, did any of them do a good job? Because, you know, I would appreciate in the big ticket items like health and housing that you would certainly be saying replace them immediately. But I was just wondering, was there anyone in that government, you know, Simon Harris, higher education, because that is an area in which you have a great interest. Did he do a good job? Simon Coveney, did he do a good job? Is there any of them? I don't want you to damn with faint praise, but would you give any of them credit?
No, but as Neil said, if you are talking about that in terms of the protocol, I saw Simon Coveney do a number of interviews, particularly on British media, that I thought that he was good in that role. And I think he spoke for all of us in that, in terms of the protocol and in terms of Brexit. So in that instance, I would say yes. But there
probably
are many.
Doesn't get as much praise within Fine Gael, is that?
There are many. No, but you have to give fair.
If you're a backbench TD looking for a passport earlier this year or last year, I don't think you would have been so supportive.
No,
I think I'll refer you to my speech in the last conference.
Or the many times he sat before the Oireachtas Foreign Affairs Committee, tying himself up in strings over various issues such as the Sapone gate, such as the party in his own office in the middle of the COVID breaching rule party in his own office. So I think he'll be thankful to hear Sinn Féin TD giving us some praise.
Look, you can take an element of people, you can take an element of people's work, and in that sense I would say but there are so many things. I mean, I think it's very obvious, Pat, that we do need a general election. There's been a cosy arrangement and it's been delivered for 2.5 years, and now we're going back to that, and I think people are crying out for something different. You know, they appear now, and I think it's interesting to watch the moves where they appear to want to go into the general election together. And that's fine, they're one and the same, but I do think that it's time for them to merge completely, because, you know, there's no difference between the two of them, and maybe that's the direction that they will continue to go in, but that's the soundings, you know, the formation of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Philip, you know, do you expect any wholesale changes here, or is the government going to look much the same, like a model of a particular motor car that gets a facelift halfway through, but it's hard to tell the difference between the 2020 model and the 2021 model?
It's more a change of oil than a facelift even. It's not even that kind of big of change. Well, again, this is the mood music that's coming from the Leo Varadkar camp and the Micheál Martin camp, that look, the big item will be Leo Varadkar going into the Taoiseach's office, Micheál Martin becoming Taoiseach, while he expected to also become Foreign Affairs Minister, Simon Coveney, who is Foreign Affairs Minister, going into the Department of Enterprise. This is what we are being led to believe. But look, Micheál Martin has played his cards very close to his chest, even some of those who are very close to him. He hasn't told outright that he is going to be Foreign Affairs Minister. He could throw a spanner in the works and turn around and decide he wants to be Social Protection Minister, for all we know, and run around the country giving out grants, rural grants as well, that come with that department. But we don't know. And on the other side of it, it very much is that they're talking about won't be wholesale changes. Most of the people who are cabinet will continue to stay on a cabinet. It's an unusual approach, and quite politically dangerous approach in many ways, because all politicians, Neil and Rose here, they're ambitious people. They want to move up the food chain. They want to get titles of office on their names and fill out their CVs over time. And if your party leader is essentially pulling up the ladder behind him and saying, look, this is the people who are at the top of the party and they will remain so for the 5 years, it doesn't provide people who are in politics with any sort of career path, I suppose.
All right, but there may be those who will indicate that they will not be going again in 20... When will it be? 2025?
Five or four, late four.
Yeah, the early parts of 2025. Interesting that the new EU Commission will come into play in 2024, which means that it will be Fianna Fáil's turn, I presume, if this is the way these jobs get given out. And Ivan Yates speculating this morning on News Talk that Micheál Martin might have his eyes on that job.
But you see, this is part of the problem, Pat, because like people listening to this, workers and families are really, really struggling with the most serious cost of living crisis for 40 years. And, you know, to them, moving the deck chairs around the Titanic isn't going to make any difference in their lives. They need hope and they need something different. They need a government that'll make a real difference in the lives of ordinary people. And instead, what they oversee is the record rents, the record homeless figures, the record health. I mean, there's so many records that this government has broken in relation to all of those things.
But it's very important to look beyond the soundbites, Pat, and actually what the government is doing in terms of...
This
isn't the worst cost of living crisis for 40 years. Like, the financial crash of less than 10 years ago was extremely hard on so many people and still has a lasting effect. But also, if you look at how we're going to tackle the issues in relation to housing, in relation to healthcare, in relation to education, if you look at how the economy is doing, effective full employment, continuing growth, one of the fastest growing economies in the EU despite a pandemic, we have a government that in the last budget has really been able to make a tangible impact. And I'm getting representations into my office, people are getting their childcare bills coming in from January and they're 400 euro less than the previous month. People are seeing that genuinely money back in their pockets, the ability to deal with the cost of living issues, many of which are beyond government control, be it international energy prices. And I think we have to reflect that this has been a good government with good ministers that have had major success.
I think that's the most most concerning thing, Pat, is that they think they've done a really good job.
Yeah. And you think
in a sense, opposition has been blessed by the kind of problems thrown at the government. I mean, the COVID pandemic, who ever would have thought? And then on top of that, inflation fueled by Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. You know, I'm not sure that, and how can we ever know how a government led by Sinn Féin would have handled those great challenges?
Well, hopefully we'll know soon. But I think what it is I think you see this time, you see a robust, solid opposition for the first time in a century since Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been in power. So I think that's what's coming to fore. But obviously there's external factors that the government or nobody else had any hand in. But at the same time, there is many, many things that could be done differently. But you have to think, before all of these things even happen, in terms of our housing crisis, for instance, you know, the whole stopping of building of social and affordable housing, the privatisation in terms of RAPOS, all of these policies have added up to something. And this is what they've added up to, and across the board in health as well in terms of privatisation.
We have to leave it there. Rose Conway-Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo, spokesperson for Higher and Further Education, Research, Innovation and Science. And Neil Richmond, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown, spokesperson on European Affairs, and Philip Ryan, political editor with the Irish Independent. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Thank you all very much.